Hello and welcome to the Music Biz Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. On today's episode, host Courtney Harding talks with Alex Mitchell, co-founder and CEO of AudioKite Research. AudioKite is a tool aimed at helping musicians create the best possible music through the power of market research. Alex and Courtney talk about how AudioKite came to be, how artists are using the platform successfully, and how to find balance between art and market research. Make sure that you subscribe to the Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. If you like the show, we would love for you to rate us highly and submit a review in iTunes. Here is the interview with Alex Mitchell of AudioKite.
First of all, for the listeners who aren't familiar with what you're working on, tell me a little bit about AudioKite and what you're currently doing.
Sure. So AudioKite is a market research platform for music creators. And when we say that, we're currently serving everything from garage bands all the way up to some of the biggest names in music and everything in between. And it's because we can reach this pool of vetted listeners that we put together, numbering about 38,000 last I looked, where we'll stream your song for a targeted sample of those listeners and then run a survey by them. So would you buy this? Would you recommend it to a friend? What genre, film, and television do you associate with this? Individual ratings on vocals, beat, instrumental performance, etc. And it really gives a comprehensive overview of how the public, you know, not just what they think about your song, but also what they feel. It's a qualitative measurement that I think we have a method that does that, you know, way better than anything else out there. And that's why we've been successful over the past year that we've been doing this.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what kinds of artists use AudioKite and in what stage in their careers? And also, what genres are you seeing the most use cases in?
It's really across the board. We see a lot of indie DIY artists just because of our price point. We started around 30 cents per response. And when I say response, it means this is an actual person in the United States who has a history with us that's listening to your song and giving you this feedback. So we can get that for, on average, I think it's 41 cents. It's 30 to 80, depending on the options and the targeting that you choose. So that's attracted a lot of different kinds of customers because it's small enough where independents can get a ton of value after running the survey by 50 to 100 people, but it also has a lot of value for enterprise because we can scale and we can access a lot more people at a loss of a smaller rate. So we have enterprise clients, we have labels using us, we have major labels using us, smaller labels, and a lot of independents. And that's really just the one kind of general product that we've been selling over the past year. And we're going to diversify that product line to best suit those different kinds of customers over the next few months.
You talked about how you sort of screened the listeners, but, you know, especially if I'm in an obscure genre, like if I'm a pop artist or a hip hop artist, that's probably a little easier. But if I'm like Wolf Eyes or making some weird, obscure noise music or crazy experimental stuff, how can I sort of know that these are people listening to my music and responding that are actually going to be potential fans and not just someone on Mechanical Turk who wants to sit and listen to songs and make money all day?
There's a couple of points there. Also, I didn't answer your previous question of what genres do we cater to. So as you can probably pick up on, there's a lot of hip hop, a lot of indie rock, a lot of pop that goes through us, a lot of country, sort of these traditional forms. And we have 11 genre categories, and those are definitely the most popular. We have an avant-garde experimental category where people are opting in. But I think it's important to note that a lot of the times when we're looking at, I'm making this music and I have a very specific idea of the kind of person that would like the music, right? So I know my audience. My audience is esoteric. They're weird. They're hipsters, right? So we want to reach that category. Part of what we do and part of what we report on is helping you figure out what that audience is, right? So just because you're making music that's esoteric doesn't necessarily mean that you won't have a track or two that could apply to a larger, more general group. I think by keeping the genre categories a little bit more open, we can actually show you, hey, maybe you didn't realize this, but females ages, you know, 35 to 44 are actually really into this, you know, death metal that you're making, which you never would have assumed before, right? A lot of the times the reports will confirm assumptions that people have while simultaneously bringing out, you know, two or three things that they never would have realized had they not run a report.
Tell me how you came up with this idea and built this company out, because I remember way back in the day getting calls on my landline from radio stations or record labels, and they would play the 5 second or 10 second clips of songs and I'd have to respond. And that obviously has been happening for decades, but that was obviously for bands that had the budget to do it, because that was not cheap. So how did you take what is granted kind of an old established idea and turn it into something that was accessible to essentially everyone?
So I think you're spot on there, where this kind of research has been happening for a very long time, sometimes through internal tools at the labels themselves that we've learned a lot about, and sometimes, you know, external research firms that are very expensive. I think when you really got it when you said, you know, making it accessible, that was the thing that we didn't really see in this space. We didn't see anybody doing that well. There's so many questions that come up that musicians ask, right? When during the creative process, during the promotion process, you know, who is our audience? What should we do? There are so many musicians that kind of sit there and make, you know, really fantastic music, or what they think is really fantastic music, and then it just kind of sits in an iTunes library and it doesn't really go anywhere, and they put it out on Bandcamp, but nobody sees it, right? How we started the company was really looking into this problem that I really do believe the best music in the world is sitting unfinished in someone's iTunes library. It's just sitting there on the desktop because they didn't know if this was the right song to finish. And also they had to go to their day job, and it's very tough being a musician and all of that. That was all what kind of informed this product, where if we can establish a standard, if we can establish consumer sentiment as important and listen to what the consumers are saying, it'll help us, one, make better music in general, and two, really filter out who among the artists running these reports and who among artists that are reaching these people are really deserving of that next level. That was a piece of it. And then the other piece of it was, how can we reach a large audience at a very low rate? So if I'm done with a song and I don't know what to do with it, how can I actually get somebody to listen to it without investing $50,000 into a marketing campaign? So that's why we tried to keep the price point low and designed a very affordable product to try to get more musicians to understand that data is important, listening to your audience is important. And over the last year, you know, we've really seen that thesis proven over and over again by the various artists that use the platform.
Have you ever had a situation where a band has thought they had one audience and then kind of it turns out like Housewives in Des Moines are your biggest, you know, your biggest audience or something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, a bunch of different stories come to mind. My head of customer support loves to joke that half of his job is responding to customer inquiries, and the other half is just being a therapist for musicians. I mean, there's a curve, right? And there's an average, and there's sort of the low end of the curve. And you know, sometimes when we do get pushback from artists, it'll be because, you know, they didn't necessarily get the scores that they thought they would. And as a result, I mean, we talk to artists constantly. We're always having conversations. I try to get on the phone as much as possible when artists, you know, want to learn more about what we're doing, or you know, where the data came from, but also what to do with the data afterwards. You know, one thing that comes to mind was very, very early into this, maybe like a month or two in. We had a report come back, and it was the lowest score we'd ever seen. I think it was somewhere around a 3. It was a hip hop song. Obviously, the consumer feedback was, we don't like this, and they were very creative about the ways they said they didn't like it. And so that artist reached out, and one of the central complaints from the people in the review was that none of his verses rhymed. So the hip hop song, none of it rhymed, and they really didn't like that. And so he reached out and said, well, you know, who are these listeners, and do they even know hip hop? Because hip hop doesn't always have to rhyme. And there are other issues that came out of that. But I went back and forth with him on email for a very long time, because it was really interesting to kind of get his thoughts. And ultimately it came down to, you know, what I said to him was, look, we're not telling you like how to make your music, and these people are not telling you to do it, you know, this way. If your artistic direction says don't rhyme, then don't rhyme. But what you've learned here, when a hip hop audience hears music like yours, they do expect it to rhyme. So maybe try that. It's something to not define your creative style, but to at least inform it. Have it be a trusted voice in the studio, because it's not one voice, it's a chorus of 1,000 voices. And a few months later, that same artist ran another report for a new song where the verses did rhyme. And I think he scored somewhere in the 5 range. So there is a very measurable improvement there. And I think that's definitely a way our product is being used to improve works in progress as sort of an artist development tool, and to be another voice in the conversation when trying to answer the myriad of questions that come up when making music and producing it.
I imagine the pushback that you've probably gotten from many people, and sort of the devil's advocate response that I had when I looked at what you were doing was, I don't want to sound like I'm a cranky purist, but isn't it about, you know, true artistic expression and your vision, and not like focus grouping your song to death?
Yes, and I am a cranky purist, actually. We get that all the time. It's a central criticism around any kind of research. There's definitely an interesting argument to be made. Should this kind of research even exist? And there isn't a binary answer to that, right? Different people are using our product in very different ways. And of course, like if you, you know, as an artist, you should be following whatever's pushing you forward as an artist, and keeping that, you know, artistic expression alive. At the same time, I think musicians have access to a number of tools now that they didn't used to have access to. This is something that the labels have been doing forever. This is something professionals and managers have been doing forever, because it does sort of help answer the question and help de-risk the investment in time, you know, behind the music you're putting out. We keep a strong network of artists. I like to joke that I'm not from the music industry, I'm from the musician industry. And that network of artists really informs how we approach the product and our marketing, who we are as a brand. We are purists. And again, the data shouldn't define, I think it should inform. You know, we have an artist that we've seen who, she's a singer-songwriter. She's uploading pieces of a song that she's been writing to AudioKite. And we noticed that over time, she's changing the song basically to exactly what the audience wants. And, you know, that's another an ongoing conversation we're having that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, to be honest. As a musician and as a producer, I don't know if that's really the answer. I don't know if we should be focus grouping everything to death, but I also don't think we should be releasing music into a void, which is unfortunately the way a lot of this, I think, still happens, particularly on an independent level where there's this thought that as long as I'm making the best music possible, that it's the most accurate reflection of who I am, as long as the music is truly great, then, you know, X will happen, lightning will strike, and now I'll be able to build a career. I think we both know that that's just not a realistic expectation in 2015. So if you are trying to build a career, and if you are the kind of artist as entrepreneur that we keep seeing, that's really who our active customer is and who's using this to try to really see, okay, before I run these Facebook ads for my band and guess at my demographic, let's do a little bit of research to figure out, you know, who that audience is before we assume that this out of the five songs is the single we should be pitching to radio. Let's do some research and figure out which of these songs people actually like. That's the way artists have been using us. And again, I don't think it's a binary thing. I mean, that's the number one thing we get pushback on is, how are these people going to tell me how to make my music? I don't need listener feedback because I'm just going to do whatever I'm going to do anyway. There's still a marketing department at the label, and there's still ways you can use this creatively without allowing it to sacrifice any artistic integrity. And I know this because I run this on my music and the artists that I produce, and I use it in a specific way. Other people use it in different ways. We're not really here to tell you how to use it. We're just here to show you what 1,000 people in the United States, genre targeted, think about the music you're making at any stage that you're making it, especially considering that this product is $20, $30 for a report. It's kind of a no-brainer, I think, if you really are serious about producing your music.
Yeah, and I think it also could be a thought experiment. So you talked about this woman who's taking all the feedback and incorporating it into her songs. I mean, I have a lot of friends who do improv, and part of doing improv and growing as an improv artist is, if the audience says bananas, you have to say yes and like talk about, you know, do something about bananas, whether you want to or not. And whether that's good or not is ultimately not the point. The point is that you take suggestions and you try them and you sort of like work them out and you see what the possibilities are. So it's almost an interesting way to help artists grow. Because I feel like one of the other big problems, and this is more on the sort of major label side, is stuff gets through that shouldn't get through because no one is giving the artists feedback. So the famous example for me is the Justin Timberlake song, Take Back the Night. And I was like, yeah, that's why you need women working at your company. Because really someone should have been like, yeah, Justin, maybe change this a little bit. And by then the money is sunk. And
right. It's too late to do anything about it.
Yeah, that's a fairly harmless example, but there have definitely been things that have come out where somebody at some point should have put a stop to it, and clearly they didn't.
And it's very opaque as to how some of those artists get through and how they don't, which, again, I don't think we're the end-all, be-all answer to that. A&R is a very careful and interesting art. Something else we get a lot, or that I get a lot, is you know, well, oh, are you trying to be an A&R platform? Are you trying to replace A&R with digital crowdsourcing? And it's like, no, 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 no. We are a tool in a modern A&R's toolkit. I think it's one point of data that you should be looking at in addition to a number of other points of data when trying to make those decisions going forward. But as you said, I really do think that this is something I talk about a lot, which is the kind of bubble that I see a lot of artists and managers and label reps get into, where, you know, if there's so much that's being put behind this one artist, there's a tendency to just sort of agree, right? And if something's really bad or if something's glaring, it's tough to be that voice to say, hey, you could probably think of two or three bands at least that you are just personal friends of yours. You know, they've been grinding for a long time. They bring people to shows. They've got some pretty good music, but there's just like one or two things that they're doing that's holding them back, right? In some cases, it's the vocalist, right? So, I can think of a band where, you know, they're really solid, great backline, interesting production, but the vocalist just isn't there. You know, he can't sing in key. And after the show, nobody's going to go to that band and say, hey, your vocalist is out of tune. You need vocal lessons. Everything else is great. This is the thing that's holding you back. Nobody says that, right? Everybody says, oh my God, what a great show. And I loved it. And can't wait for the next one. And then half the audience leaves and doesn't come back. And you don't know why they didn't come back. Those are the moments that I think we try to focus on with this, where our reviewers are, I'll be honest, they're very brutal sometimes. They'll tell you exactly what they think. And, you know, they'll run a report to say, hey, this is all great. Your vocalist is terrible, right? This is the one thing you need to really improve on if you want to be successful long term. So I think that's where we can come in. We can kind of be that voice and facilitate conversations. It's a lot easier to defend a creative decision when you have the voices of 1,000 of your potential fans behind you, whether that's in the studio, whether that's in a boardroom talking about marketing strategy. I think that voice is very important and is generally discounted in the way people are writing, producing, and marketing music today.
And there's also this sort of, you know, interest, I feel like, more especially among younger musicians and younger people in general, in collaboration and lean startup concept that spills over into other areas of creativity and life, where you're not going to record an album at a studio out in the woods and then just put it out, right? You're going to record a couple tracks, let your fans give you some feedback, sort of let people watch the process happen. So do you find that younger artists are a little bit more sort of amenable to this, or do you have a really broad range of people who are using the tool in terms of age?
It's a really broad range. I got to be honest. We sort of have internal charts, right? And we can see who's scoring and who's doing really well. There's a couple artists that are teenagers. I think they're like 13 and 16, a country group that's been scoring very well lately. And on the other end, we have, you know, some of these old guard classic rock type musicians. I mean, it's everything. And that actually is sort of a challenge for us in a number of ways, because music and saying like musicians and artists, these are huge terms that cover a lot of different kinds of people with a lot of different kinds of motivations. And we've seen those kind of cohorts of artists use our product in very different ways. So I would say it really kind of runs the spectrum. What we don't run into is a lot of artists that say like, wait, this makes absolutely no sense at all. I think everybody can glean something from this, because at the end of the day, if you're making music that you want people to hear, I think there's an intrinsic want to know what they think about it, right? And this is going to get you a more honest picture than really anything else you can do at a rate that is kind of makes it kind of a no-brainer.
How do you see the artists using it, maybe even in conjunction with data from like Next Big Sound or any other data that they can pull from maybe streaming services? Like, do you see artists sort of putting together all the data from all these different sources and using it to do different things, whether it's, you know, plot out a tour or figure out a release schedule, anything like that?
So I would say in terms of combining it with other data, I've probably seen more of that from the A&R departments and the A&R professionals that we work with, probably more so than artists. But at the same time, I mean, you mentioned tour support. That's definitely something that we see people using. We report on the geography of the various reviewers, so you can kind of see like, you know, where in the country or where in the United States, what markets the song applies to. We recently had a label, they've been using, you know, all these other data services. They ran a track through AudioKite. The song was by a very provocative pop artist. And it's my understanding that the song was basically about cheating on your spouse. And when they ran the track, they noticed that it kind of came back with sort of lukewarm average scores across the board. So they really dug into the report. And I love that they went this in-depth into the data. They took the raw data out and they started looking at it. And what they found was that while the averages were sort of low, the average scores on the coast were super high and far above the average, and the scores in the middle of the country, in the Midwest, were incredibly low. You can imagine that, you know, so now they know, well, wait a minute, the market for this artist and the market for the song probably isn't necessarily in the middle of the country in the Midwest where they have certain values. It's probably more on the coast where it's like, yeah, cheat on your spouse, right? So that's, you know, that's an example of, I think, a label that's, they're looking at a lot of different sources. I don't know if that's something that you could glean from you know, the other metrics or the other kinds of metrics they're providing, which is why I'm a big proponent of, you know, don't just use us in a whole bunch of other things. We are a tool in an ever expanding toolkit that helps artists, that helps labels and you know, music professionals really understand the material they're working with.
Well, they should have cross-checked it against the Ashley Madison hack data. I think that would actually have been like a perfect marketing campaign for that track.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, there, like I said before, there's a lot of different kinds of artists. There's a lot of different kinds of music. The one thing that everyone has in common, generally speaking, is they want this music to reach the widest number of people possible. I talk to artists a lot about goals, right? What are your goals? What are you actually trying to accomplish with this music? And, you know, how can you look back a year from now and say, okay, this is a success or this wasn't a success? I think the goal really of most artists, or at least a lot of the artists that I've talked to that we work with, is to just get their music to the, like, there's a certain number of people in the world who would really respond to your music, really love it. It would enrich their lives. It would, you know, you could be their favorite artist. And that person might be in Kansas. That person might be in Ukraine. You have no idea how many people in the world this could really spread to. So I think the goal should be, how do you reach as many of those people as you possibly can, as fast as you can? And with the propagation of tools like ours, you don't necessarily have to go through the traditional channels to reach them. There are other ways to do it affordably and do it effectively.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. If people want to find AudioKite or you online, where can they do it?
So just audiokite.com, and if you wanted to reach me, I'm Alex, A-L-E-X, at audiokite.com. Half my day is email anyway, so I'll definitely be happy to answer any questions anyone has. We're pushing a pretty big update later in the month that I'm very excited about. Definitely sign up today and keep an eye out on your inbox. It's a great product. I mean, it really is. We wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't a great product. So I encourage every musician to really try this and see what you learn.
Great. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks so much, Courtney.
That's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thank you to Hypebot for helping us put out this show. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, please send an email to kyle.bolin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bolin@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion.